The American Women's World Cup Tech Squad has to be one of the most exciting teams to watch, even when Michaela's not racing. Everyone on the team sends it. Nina O'Brien has broken her leg twice in the last 3 years and is still pointing it down the far line on her way to top 10s and top 5s. AJ Hurt earned her Sendy merits by going bib 38 to 3rd last year in the Kranskogorda Slalom. There's Katie Hentzian, bib 47 to 4th in her injury comeback race in Solden last October. And let's not forget, the Bocock sisters are knocking down the door, really. And they don't lack in sendiness either. Now, the reason we're here today, the veteran of this crew, who has lined up several podiums this season, including a bronze at the World Championships recently, is none other than Paula Moulton. She's wonderful to talk to, a lot of good things to say. So let's get to it. And we are back. I'm Jimmy Krupka, and welcome to Arc City. Arc City is officially sponsored by Ski Racing Media. This episode is sponsored by Falls Creek Race Club. I'd also like to thank Sync Performance for supporting me this season, and a shout out to Ski Cosmos, a ski simulator and training center in Vancouver. Learn more at skicosmos.com. All right, without further ado, Paula Moulton. Paula Moulton, welcome to Arc City.
Thanks for having me.
So I have a whole bunch of topics I want to talk about, and I was trying to figure out the first one. I was looking at Wikipedia, which is something I do to kind of just get a nice little recap on my guests, and yours wasn't updated fully after your amazing results at World Champs. And I have an account after a lot of time on Wikipedia. I have an account where I can edit, and the edits actually go through. So I put on your account all of your World Champs results. I didn't realize, I mean, I was watching the whole time, but I didn't realize that you had like 3/4, and then you had that bronze medal, but you had 3/4. But so was that like, at that World Champs, was it frustrating? Like, oh, I'm so close, or?
Yeah, I guess it's both, right? Because the starting off the team event, we got 4th, and that was like kind of bittersweet, right? I think all of us wanted so much more, but it just like wasn't our time and place, which was fine. So I think that one, I was like, ah, it's okay, like whatever. And then I got to the team combined with Lauren, and she had won the downhill, and I probably had like my worst slalom run of the year.
Oh, really?
And then we got 4th, and I was like, oh, that sucks. I like have never felt like so much guilt and sadness about something in a long time. And that was a big thing. I was just like, I felt like I had really let somebody down. And you're like, ski racing doesn't happen that way as much because we're so individual. But when you're racing, it's like college racing. When you're racing with another person, there's so many other people you're trying to carry along the ride that I just like, I'd never started last in a World Cup. I've met like, yeah, it was a whole new experience. And so that one hurt the most. I think 4th in the team combined was the worst one. And then I got 3rd in the
junior. Well, let's pause and talk about the team event. Because there's two things that you said there. The first was like letting the teammate down. It's tough, right? Because you're part of a team. But can we agree, like, was the team event really, or the team combined, sorry, was the team combined really fun? Like, we're keeping that, huh?
Yeah. I think everyone enjoyed it. I think, and then like the next day watching the men do it, I think living it, it was stressful. Watching the men do it, really fun.
Okay.
So I think like while you're in it, it's a lot more stress. And I even talked to like Katarina Leinsberger, and she was like, it was so stressful. Like Katarina Leinsberger has like wins across multiple disciplines, multiple world champs. And she was like, it was the most like stressed I've ever been in the Stargate. So it was nice to know I wasn't alone in that feeling. But yeah, it was really fun. I 1000% wanted to stay around. I think it was a really cool viewing experience, especially like watching the men the next day.
Yeah. So, and that was your first time. Lauren won the downhill portion, and that was your first time starting 30th at a World Championships race.
Yeah, it was. And I think there's something to be said about like learning how to do that and the mindset. Like I've had a handful of World Cup podiums, but I had never pushed out last of the gate. And so you're like, you're kind of alone. The intervals get really long. They're 2 minutes in between and like plus some. And like, Yeah, I think like the nerves got the better of me, and yeah, I skied really safe. I was just like, I think it was more scared to straddle than I've ever been, because it's like in downhill you don't really
Oh.
straddle, so like the like risk of error is so much smaller. Whereas in slalom, straddling is like pretty normal. It happens to everybody pretty regularly, and so I was like, that'd be the worst, would be to straddle and then like go out and like let my teammate down that way. But then I realized, I think after I crossed the finish line in fourth, I was like, actually, I think I would have rather straddled than not than done this.
Yeah. But did that give you
So I'm
motivation
kind of
going
be like,
into the GS?
yeah, motivation and like confidence too, just to like stick to your plan, make it, and like do like don't worry about the times, like just ski exactly how you need to ski. And more so than the GS, it helped my slalom. I like it gave me a run on the slalom hill, which was really important to like build
Yeah.
confidence and like feel the snow, and then just like knowing that like skiing safe isn't going to do anything for you, so you just kind of have to go for it. And that was like the rest of my mentality, the rest of the world champs, which helped.
Yeah, definitely. And that was your first, like, you'd never gotten a podium in a World Cup GS before.
I did. I podiumed in GS the weekend before,
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
or
Yeah, but
two
this was the first year. This was your
GS
year
week.
that your GS was heating up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The GS is up this year. It's a first for me.
Yeah. I slowly lost my GS this year, which mostly happens because I wasn't training it. But what was it like? A lot of slalom skiers, once they are skiing fast in slalom, slowly lose their GS. But you kind of kept it up and you got better at it. Was there something particular you were doing?
I think I'm lucky in that all my teammates are really fast GS skiers, and so
Oh.
I don't think it's anything I mean. I think it has everything to do with my teammates. Like I've been on this team with Nina, AJ, Katie, and I, and like Ava's been in and out with injury, and our team is definitely really strong in GS and like very strong as home, but GS is definitely like where a lot of those girls have a lot more speed than I do. And so I think just like every day getting pushed by them to be faster, and like any day of training, any one of us could be winning a run. And that I think has just like helped me so much in my GS, is like just like learning how to be like extremely competitive in GS, because I don't want to be this, like, I don't want to be slow.
Yeah, that's a great point. So you're getting podiums in GS, and these girls are beating you. So you think it's a matter of time for Nina, AJ, they do it and put it on the top there?
Yeah, I do think so. I think it's like I said before, you just like it's learning how to podium is actually quite hard. We spend like, right, you there's like cycles of ski racing, in that you like you start fifth, and then you maybe start to like get top tens in fifth, and then you like start to win fifth races, and then you go to NORAM, and then you're like hoping to make top 30, then you're like, oh, top tens are sick, and then you learn to podium in NORAMs.
Yeah.
And then there's like the gap between NORAMs and World Cup, like where you should ski Europa Cup. And on the women's year, like side, like we don't really ski a lot of Europe Cup, just because there's kind of been a gap for a while. And so it's like in into World Cup, start outside the 30, you're just hoping for top 30, and like maybe top 20s, top 10s, top fives even, and then like knocking on the like the door of like World Cup podiums is a whole different beast. I think like sure you might be able to have like a first run that's like top five, top three, but then like to perform again on a second run in World Cup Tech is extremely difficult, because the people around you have so much experience. When you're new to those experiences, it's like you are already at a disadvantage. And so like with Alice and like Fede, it's like when I'm standing next to them in the start gate, I'm like, holy moly, these girls are way better than I am. But like at the end of the day, they are, but also like I need to remember that I belong there as well. And so it's just
Yeah.
been like this cycle of like relearning how to do that. And I think that's the same thing for our entire team. Our entire team is fast in slalom and in GS. It's just like the familiarity of like learning how to win a race again.
Yeah. That's a total, it totally makes sense. Like, it's amazing the stories I'll hear of who's beating who in training. On the men's side in World Cup slalom, and by how much, like Henrik is getting beat by 3 seconds or whatever, and then he goes and wins the next weekend. Like, it's so much just this skill of knowing how to ski a second run and how to handle the pressure and all of these different things that are just kind of intangible.
Totally. And I 100% agree. Same thing on the women's side, right? You're like, I might train with like Michaela and Slalom or GS and I might beat her, but she knows how to win. She's got 100 of them. So it's like, and that's like same with Fede. It's like her GS is so solid on those second runs. Like, whereas like everyone in front of her is coming down, like maybe not winning the run. She's like coming down winning the run. And you're like, it's not easy because the conditions have clearly, but like, it doesn't faze you. You're like, your skiing is so solid. And so I think it's like learning from like watching those girls around you and just like remembering to believe that you belong there has like helped my transition in GS. Like for the longest time, I didn't believe I belonged in the top 15 in GS. Now I feel like I belong there.
Do you think it's kind of a matter of just telling yourself I belong, or is it kind of like you need to prove it through results to yourself?
Yeah, I think there's both. I think you do have to tell yourself you belong, or like that you believe it. And like Ryan, the last thing Ryan tells me, like out of the circuit, usually is he's like, I believe in you, which is like really huge for me. It's like, okay, I believe in me, but also this other person's believing me. But then also for yourself to like truly believe it, I think you have to have those results. You have to have like multiple top tens in a season to be like, oh yeah, like I belong in this spot, versus like maybe you have like one like really good result and like a handful of bad results. And after those bad results, it's hard to get back up to that level of like being a top five skier again.
Yeah. 100%. I agree. Like this season I was skiing the fastest I've skied in training against a lot of guys who were fast, but I didn't have any results to prove it. So it was continuously harder and harder to believe I belonged, even though like whatever objectively, maybe I did. You mentioned Ryan, and I wanted to talk about that. I'm sure a million people ask you about Ryan and being married to your technician. I actually talked to Ryan about it when I interviewed him for the podcast episode last year. I guess tell me a little bit about, Ryan's role and managing like the husband side versus the technician side.
Yeah, I don't have the perfect solution, but we're figuring it out day by day. Ryan was first my boyfriend. I would just like to clarify that.
You guys were dating far before he was your technician. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that helps is like, and he's seen my skiing through so many different evolutions that he's actually like an incredible coach for me. Like he is like such an eye, and like honestly, he's like nitpicks my skiing more than any coach I've ever had. And like he's pretty ruthless. Like even today, like I had a pretty good run. He's like, yeah, and it's like you really missed it, that those couple turns. And I was like, what about the rest of it? It was pretty good. And he's like, yeah, but those couple turns, like, didn't do it. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool, nice. But yeah, he is husband, coach, technician, driver, organizer. I don't know. He does everything. I don't do much. I just ski. And it's cool. I think having someone on the road, we spend so long on the road, to have someone with me that's just here for me makes it easier. And like that he's my husband makes it easier too, because we are able to disconnect from like ski racing, even if it's just for like at night. But then like for the last 4 days, we went to London and like we just like go and do other things. And like if he wasn't here, I wouldn't like really be able to do that as much.
100%. And it's a skill too, because like it seems like you guys consciously make an effort to disconnect from ski racing. But I found that like when you're over in Europe, especially as a North American, the reason you're in Europe is to ski, and you're just staying at hotels, and it starts to feel like the only thing that exists in life is ski racing. And so if you have like bad races or bad results or even good results, it's just like hard to remove yourself from that. But it seems like you guys make an effort.
I think our whole team is pretty good at like remembering to like disconnect from the world of ski racing in general. Yeah. I think that's like a team culture thing, that when we do have breaks, like we have gone separate ways a lot this year, just because I think it's good for us to like find space. Like we do spend like 3 months consecutively in Europe together as four girls, which is like good and bad. Like they're my sisters, but like just like siblings, like we have like tiffs, and like you have to move on through those. And the best way sometimes is like a little bit of space. And so I think that everyone's been able to find a little space throughout the season helps like team culture as well as just like mental sanity.
Definitely. I love your team culture. Like I've always loved the women's tech team, and I've hung out with you guys a few times in the winter over there. And you got AJ hurt, Katie Hensian was hurt last year, but she's back. Nina O'Brien was hurt last year, but she's back. So it's kind of your core four. Ava Sunshine is coming back. And then you have these young girls coming in. You got the Bocox, right? Moritz. And but yeah, so was it a conscious effort to create this team culture, or do you think it's just a good group of girls, or both?
I think it's both. I think we've spent so, like, the core group, like, I think it, like, Nina and Kate, or Nina and AJ were on the team before I came back from the team, sort of back from college. So they, like, have been together for even longer. But then I joined the group, and then Katie joined the group, and then Ava joined the group. And so it's, like, slowly multiplied. But I think Magnus did a really great job, like, helping develop team culture, kind of, like, almost, like, setting the boundaries for, like, no bullshit. And, like, just expressing how you feel and, like, take the space when you need it. And I do think it comes down to, like, the girls as well, right? Everyone is allowed to have their own personality, but is, like, loved for their, like, personality as well. And I don't think anybody on our team is, like, outright, like, mean or, like, out to get somebody else. And I think that helps. Like, we all want to be really fast ski racers, but we're not going to do it at, like, the harm of our teammates.
Are you looking for your next big coaching opportunity? Join the Falls Creek Race Club in Australia for an unforgettable coaching experience this winter. From late June to mid-September, you'll be responsible for a team of U16 and FIS athletes in an incredible training environment for tech disciplines in both a beautiful and unique alpine setting. Falls Creek is home to World Cup winner Steve Lee and Malcolm Milne. Their legacy is the foundation of a club that's dedicated to developing top-tier skiers. If you have the experience and passion in alpine skiing, this is your chance to make an impact. But that's not all. We're also seeking an inspiring freestyle coach. If you have strong credentials and the ability to challenge your young athletes in both big mountain and park disciplines, we want you to help elevate the next generation of freestyle skiers. For further information and to apply, click the link provided in the description and or email the athletics director, Mike Gould, at athletics.director@fcrc.com.au. And so the interesting thing about your team that maybe not everyone knows unless they closely follow you guys is that Michaela Schifrin is not, you know, she's not technically part of your team. She has her own PTs and coaches and technicians, and she kind of travels alone and trains alone most of the time. What's it like? Like, do you get days where you get to train with her and you get advice from her, and like, how does that operate?
Yeah, so she was obviously injured, like this season specifically, she was injured for a lot of it. So she's just been at home in Vail training, and we haven't seen a lot of her. But when she came back, like before World Champs and stuff, we trained with her, which is really nice, actually. We skied 2 or 3 days in Fulgaria, or not Fulgaria, and I don't even know where we were, Liaogang, before World Champs. And it was great just to like ski with her. And like, I think for both parties, it's like good for her to be with us because like, I think it's important to have teammates. And then it's good for us to be with her because she brings up intensity more than like, maybe we're maybe a little more relaxed. So
yeah,
I think it's good. I think when we get the opportunities to train with her, it's really great. And they've been relatively frequent as well, because after World Champs, we trained together before going to Sestriere. So it's been good. I think it hasn't been like that long of a season for her, so we haven't spent that much time. But when we do crossover, she's always super friendly and like willing to give advice, willing to like just like chat. And I think she's been like really friendly this year, which is nice. And like, she wants to be, it feels like she wants to be like more involved with our team, which is a nice feeling as well, because I think maybe you can see that our team culture is good and like we're also skiing fast, so that benefits everybody.
Yeah, for sure. The more you spend time with fast people and good people, the better. Yeah,
exactly. She's so fast, and like, it's her slalom like impresses me every single day, because you're like, she like had a really tough day obviously on Saturday and then like won the next day. I don't know how you change your mindset so fast, but like learning how to do that from her is a skill I think everybody could learn. And also just like when she skis slalom, she's consistently fast. It's like so useful to ski with her, and like it's good to watch, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, her slalom is insane sometimes. Are there any days where you train with her and like in slalom and or GS where she's just like crushing people by seconds?
I would say like not really this year. Like in GS, I would say our team is maybe like her GS is like, I think she's got a mental block in GS and she's talked about it. And so I feel like right now, maybe in GS, our team is faster than her team, which is okay. We haven't actually trained together now that I'm thinking about it.
Not but even over the years, like, but, can you think back?
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's many times she's been like at least a second ahead of me, and I'm like, oh God, this is gonna go poorly. But then you get to the race and she's still just as fast, and you're like, okay, well, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe she's just like so far in another league that like being a second behind her and not that bad.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I mean, she can win a race by a second sometimes. So if you're a second behind, maybe you're
Yeah.
second place.
Yeah, very true.
And I know, like, I can tell you want to win. Like, what's like, how do you think about that? What's your process towards getting to that World Cup win? Do you feel like you're satisfied already, or do you feel like you're not satisfied until you get a World Cup win?
Doesn't everybody want to win? That's the whole
Yeah.
point of being a ski racer. Yeah, I think the process to my first like World Cup win is gonna be a little bit longer. I feel like I'm still like working out a lot of like small like errors. I think maybe if the cards fell the right way, I could win. But also there's some like luck involved in spacing, right? And so I think my like process from here to there is gonna be like kind of sticking the same, just like working on more consistency, especially just like in training those first two runs, making sure they're like error free. And like the problem, like I know I have fast skiing, it's just like I make mistakes, and like people always tell me like you ski so recklessly, and I'm like, okay, but like I don't know how to ski the other way. So I am working on having less mistakes but not losing the speed.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's key. So I gotta be honest, sometimes you scare me when you ski, especially GS. Like the number of clips that FIS Alpine has posted of you like going sideways, doing whirly birds, almost high siding, is terrifying, but you always make it out. Like, do you get scared in those scenarios, or do you feel like you have it under control?
Like yes and no, like mostly in control. I feel like I have like decent body awareness, and that like when I'm spinning or like turn, like I don't know, like when I did a like my somersault on my slalom skis, like I knew I was gonna be fine because I just rolled. I think yeah, when you're like going backwards, like on GS skis, like going pretty fast, it's not that settling. I feel like that's when I'm scared, but somehow it always works out.
Yeah. But you're trying to obviously keep that speed, just keep a little more consistency.
Yeah, like second run in Sestriere on the first day, like I was sitting in third, and then I was skiing well, like I was green the whole way down, and then I made a mistake, I don't know, 10 gates from the finish, because I like was maybe slightly inside, and like I'm coming over a roll, and so I like got a little inside, and like inside ski caught, and like it's just like little things like that. It's like nitpicking ski racing, and that's where Ryan's quite good, because he's like, even though the whole run might be good,
Yeah.
those two or three gates where you do small mistakes is where you lose World Cup podiums.
Yeah. You got to be perfect, I guess. As perfect as you can be.
That's good.
Another thing I saw on your Wikipedia, it was very random. I don't know what the source was, but like in the intro, amongst all of the different listings of your results, it said her biggest influences are her cousin Alan and her uncle Scott. Is that true?
That is
And
so.
can you tell me about them?
No, that's not true. And it's because my cousin and my uncle ha also have a in like capabilities of editing a Wikipedia. I don't know when they do it, but I think I was like, we went to like my grandfather's funeral last summer, 2 summers ago. And he was like, did you know that that's still on your Wikipedia? And I was like, no, it's not. And then I looked and it still is. And I don't really know how to change it, but it's kind of funny. So I'll keep it
So they
there. But
just
yeah,
went
my
on there and
cousin.
decided that they were your biggest influences.
Exactly. They are. And like my cousin Alan and I are like almost the same age. So.
Did you
It
ski
was
race
fun.
against him growing up?
No, he doesn't ski at all. He's like an engineer in California now. He was like always super smart. We like spent time at the lake house in the summer, and that was it.
Okay. That's so funny. Well,
Yeah.
you could take it out if you want, or we just leave it in there. I think it's a fun little Easter egg.
I think we'll just leave it there. I haven't been on my Wikipedia page.
Until you like win a medal at the Olympics, and the NBC reporter has the only research they've done is Wikipedia, and they're asking you about your Alan and Scott.
Can't wait. It'll be good. I'll wait for that moment and then I'll remove it.
Okay. And so growing up, you were in Buck Hill, Minnesota. What and it's considered kind of a ski racing factory, right? Like you just lap on this short slalom hill.
Yeah.
Is there anything in particular about Buck Hill that makes it special? Why so many skiers come out of there? Yeah. Lindsey Vonn, Isaiah Nelson, who's on the team right now.
Yeah, totally. There's, I mean, Christina Kosnick before that, and like Tasha Nelson, Isaiah's aunt, and yeah, there's like a list of really talented skiers that have come out of there. I think for me, it was a lot of Eric. I think Lindsey's talked a lot about Eric Seiler as a ski coach, and like he is like so influential in my like very young career, and like he was my first exposure to like a tough Austrian coach, which is like so crazy thinking about it that it's come so full circle that I spent so much time in Europe. But yeah, he was like pretty ruthless. Like he always believed and told me he believed in me, but like his coaching like was so ruthless, like it was never kind, and like that's okay because the raw, like that organic feedback telling me to like work on all these things like made me better. And I think his like legacy at Buck Hill is like what people talk about when you talk about the slalom factory, and he is like, I think he's like 98 or 99, he's like getting up there. And so when he was coaching me, he was like in his like, I don't know, like mid 60s, early 70s, so he's just like kind of an icon, and like just like brought that like European, like Austrian ski culture to this like tiny little ski hill. And like, yeah, like you said, we used to lap. I used to take like 25 slalom runs a night, which is crazy. Yeah.
That's awesome. And then after Buck Hill, I actually am really curious to talk to you about college, because my younger brother is in his PG year. I talked to a million parents. I'm on like a, the development subcommittee. So the subject of developing young ski racers and college ski racing is been forefront in my brain for a while. And you are kind of this poster child in the US of you can develop through college. But can you walk me through like how many years you did in the D team before college, and then like what your resources were with the ski team while at college, and kind of your that whole process there?
Yeah. Okay. So I was before I went Buck Hill, and then I went to Vail for 2 years. Mm-hmm. But in my second year at Vail, or like the spring of my first year, I got named to the US ski team, and then I was on the US development C/D team for 5 years. In that
so
time,
that was like as you graduated high school, you were on the D team for 5 years.
Yeah. So my senior year was for like, I guess you'd call them gap years, right?
Yeah.
I was on the development team. Never won a NORAM title on the development team. I won a world championship slalom medal. I scored my first World Cup points. And then I had like one season in which it was like my first full World Cup ski season. I didn't score World Cup points like many people do in their first World Cup season. And so then that spring I was like unnamed or told I wasn't allowed to come back, or that I wasn't being asked back to the team. And I was like, oh, well, now what do I do?
Some people call it cut. Some people call it failed to qualify. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was cut. And like, I couldn't really understand why. Like I had a World Juniors medal. I had World Cup points, or I had World Cup points the previous season. I had just had one bad season. It was like my first bad season in my like entire career. And I was like, this is pretty ruthless, but okay. Yeah. And so then I was at the spot and I have no idea what I'm gonna like. I'm not done ski racing. Like, I still feel like I like ski racing, but at the same time, I was like, I fucking hate ski racing because it's like so like world. And someone tells you you're not good enough to be at the top level, you're like, well, maybe I'm not. And so my next call, I think like today, was to Bill Reichelt, and I was like, it was, I don't know, you know, like early April or end of April, early May. That's when they do all the cuts. And I was like, you got any spots left on your team? Because that's where Ryan was going to go to school. And I was like, yeah, I don't really want to like keep this long distance going. So I was like, Ryan's going to UVM, so I want to go to UVM. And Bill was like, yes, we have a spot, and I have a scholarship for you. And so it was kind of like a quick handshake agreement that I was going to UVM, and we figured out the details in like the coming months. And that's how I ended up at UVM.
When you're like 20, and then 1 years old or something?
22. I had just turned 22. And so I was like, oh, pretty old freshman. This should be fun. but the nice thing about college ski racing is there's a lot of old freshmen. And so that made me feel good about myself. At the time, the UVM ski team was quite strong. There was on the men's side, like Max Roysland and Sandy Beats and Griffin Brown. Gabby Coulet was on the team. We had a sweet little men's team.
Yeah.
And then on the women's side, we had like Laurent Saint-Germain on the team, myself, Brittany Lathrop was in her senior year. Like both sides, men's and women, were super strong. So I was like lucky to be like walking into a team that was fast. I think that was like one thing that really helped me in my college career. And then the second thing is that we were training at Stowe. And for those that have never skied at Stowe and never met had the pleasure of meeting Igor, the Stowe like training slope is like impeccable. It's perfect almost every single day. Like this, it's like you ski ice every single day on a steep technical slope. And I think that is like was the only thing that kept me alive in my college career, was like skiing challenging like courses every single day. It was never easy
on hard snow.
Yeah, on hard snow, on icy snow. Like, I mean, you've skied Stowe.
Yeah,
there's like a handful of days it's good.
Yeah, 100%. And you did that for 4 years straight.
So technically 2 years straight. And then, okay, so like in my sophomore year, I got an invite to race like the quali for Killington because there's always extra spots. And so I qualified for Killington. I threw like a time trial on copper. So I skied Killington. I didn't finish, whatever. So then I like continued with another college season. And then the next year after that, and like those 2 years in college, I would say I had like absolutely zero support from the US ski team. I was like just doing it completely. Like college, I skied like most of the NORAMs. I didn't ski all of the NORAMs because it didn't make sense for some of them.
Yeah.
And
did you do skiing in the summer?
No, I did not ski at all in the summer.
Oh, really?
I would take from like whatever NORAM finals until we went to copper with like college in November, like after Thanksgiving. No, but right like before Thanksgiving. So I would take like a lot of time off and like, I'll be honest, like I don't think I was the most dedicated gym goer. I was working full time at my parents' rafting company. Like I was just like surviving life. I was very much a college ski racer, and that I like had a separate life of ski racing in the summer, which I think like in the end I'm like grateful for, because I like removed myself from ski racing enough to like be excited to come back.
Are you getting notifications or something on your computer?
It's not me, it's Ryan, because I'm on his computer. I don't know how to. I don't know what to mute this. Hide alerts. Is that how you do this? Maybe. Oh yeah, muted. Perfect. Okay. So yeah, those 2 years at UVM, I was like unsupported by the US ski team. Like UVM supported me the whole way. Like I had Bill and Tim Kelly as my coach, which was awesome.
Former World Cup slalom skier.
Exactly. And he was freshly like off. I think that's like when he left, retired from the US ski team as well. So like he came straight from like World Cup to coaching the UVM team, which I think was like really lucky in that he had a pretty good eye for coaching as well as coming off men's slalom. So then the next November I went to the time trial again and I won. And then I ended up getting 17th at Killington, which then I opened my own spot for World Cup. And that year I was like skiing college full time and skiing World Cup full time.
Wow.
And with no support from the US ski team. I mean, Magnus was great in like helping me like organize training, but I still wasn't like really allowed to train with the US ski team at all. I like paid for everything out of my pocket. And obviously I'm lucky enough that I had Ryan travel with me as my like serviceman coach, everything. And so then that spring I was named.
Gotcha.
To the team.
And so you didn't end up skiing your senior year in college?
No, I ran out of eligibility. So I had no eligibility, no scholarship. And so then I was like, well, I guess we're going back to ski racing.
There you go. So and you've been named the team. What was that? That was like 20, what year was that?
19, the spring of 2019.
Okay. Yeah. Because I remember.
19.
Because that was like the 17, 18 or 18, 19 years. I was an invitee one of those years. And it was a weird year to be an invitee to the team, or like to try to train with the team while not being named. Yeah. And then it got better for a few years where they were doing a better deal where you got all the jackets, but you had to pay, but you weren't on the website or something like that. They've changed their different ways that they bring people in who aren't named.
Totally. And I think like, I know the men's side's not perfect, but the men's side has always been better with the invitees. And like, I don't think there's truly ever been a female invitee on the US ski team, whereas on the men's side there has.
Oh, okay.
Which is interesting. But in the debate of college skiing and the development team,
yeah,
there's been lots of information, right? I don't know. It's very curious.
Yeah. Well, it's tough because a lot of people, I think people get the wrong idea when they think that you can leave high school, go to college, and come out 4 years later a World Cup skier. Like, you need to have some exposure. Like, you have to have some serious exposure to World Cup tracks or World Cup training slopes or fast training group or whatever throughout those 4 years or before.
Totally. You, like, can't go, like, I don't think you can be freshly 18, graduated high school, and walk right onto a college team and get what you need to get out of it. I think those, like, post-grad years are actually quite important. I think, like, in those years, you have to, like, learn how to, like, almost like hyper focus on ski racing and like, but also find other things that inner, like you can like focus on that aren't just ski racing. And
yeah.
Then when you go to college, you also need to be like ready to like, I think being like 18 years old and trying to learn how to balance college courses, which, and then like also ski racing and like gym time and like all these, like, and then racing maybe NORAMs as well. Like, that is so much to take on as an 18 year old with like, obviously, like, family is great and like your parents support you, but you need some ownership in it as well. And so like, maybe it's better to like those post-grad years are maybe like more beneficial than going straight into college.
Gotcha. Which is a hard thing to tell some people because it's expensive to do gap years.
Insanely expensive. I don't even think like, yeah, like when I was on the D team, I'll call my four post-grad years, but really I was in the time for 5 years, paid $30,000 to be on the US ski team. And I was in the development team. Like, I was a part of the program paying $30,000. Yeah. So I was basically just like paying for my PhD with resources.
Yeah. Yeah.
I totally agree. I think those, like, I don't even know, like, I think I fundraised. I don't know. I did everything. My parents did not have that money to be paying out of pocket. And somehow, like, we all scrapped together and it's worked out because I've become a successful World Cup skier. But
yeah,
many times it doesn't.
Yeah. And do you think probably, though, like, that was the best route for you, like, in the long run to go to college when you got cut?
I didn't really have, I guess I could have, like, been,
if you
like,
have a choice, but like, say that one bad World Cup year had actually been a good World Cup year. Do you think in the long run you would have been happy and successful, or do you think, I mean, it's a woulda, coulda, shoulda scenario, but
yeah, totally. Yeah. I don't know, actually. I think that being removed from the ski team made me learn how to be grateful and like change my perspective. I think as like a young 18 year old getting named to the US ski team, I think you just expect these things to be handed to you. You're like, oh, mm-hmm. You get the jacket, you get the training, like you get skis, you get a technician. So like life is pretty easy, right? Like you go on to this development team and everything's taken care of for you. And you expect people to take care of you. And then like when you go to college, there's no one to take care of you. And so I think I learned like a lot of like appreciation, and I learned how to like kind of take a different view on ski racing and like learn how to maybe make ski racing like more fun for myself. And so I don't think I would have been as successful if I wouldn't have gone to college. I think for me, it was this huge learning process.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
And I learned to be coachable. I think I wasn't coachable before I was went to college. I think you just like, people tell you, but you can't actually feel it. Like when I went to college, like the coaches are good, but they're not going to lap with you every run. They're not going to coach you every run. So you have to like learn how to like kind of figure it out yourself. Like watch your, like really watch your own video, really like try to like feel what you're feeling under your feet. And that has helped me pay off now as a World Cup skier, is because I can feel like when I ski a run, I could tell you exactly what I did wrong and where I did it and why it happened.
Uh-huh. So in this weird way, maybe having college coaches, well, it's hard for them to be engaged because they have whatever, so many athletes compared to, well, for instance, like a World Cup coach. Athletes. Yeah. Number one, it's hard for them to be fully engaged. But number two, there's a number of college coaches that don't really, let's be honest, don't really put in the effort to give you really detailed feedback. But it's almost better that way because you have to learn how to ski without someone constantly telling you what you did.
Totally. And I think that was a very good thing for me, is like learning how, like it's helped me in the long run of like learning how to, like when testing equipment and like developing equipment, it's like that like knowledge of what I feel while I ski has helped me find the right equipment that fits my style. And so without college, I don't think I would have had any of my success. And that's cool. But do I think it's the place to develop an 18-year-old skier? I don't think so.
Gotcha. Yeah. There's a lot more serious molding that needs to go on, I think, for 18. And also, by the way, for any college coaches listening, my last comment wasn't a shot. I also recognize that a lot of college coaches understand that, like, when they're trying to help athletes, sometimes the best thing to do is to provide a good training atmosphere, provide good vibes, and just let the athletes start to figure it out.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are like a very, like, the range of college coaches is so great. And I think that some are incredible and some are maybe less incredible, but I think you also, as an athlete, have to make the best of it and, like, learn how to work with different coaches. Like, you have to be able to adaptable. And so, like, maybe they don't have, like, the best, like, technical knowledge, but they're really good at, like, hyping you up. And, like, that is, like what you have to build off of.
I've got a discount code for you for Sync Performance. And I love Sync not only because they make great products like my snow pants that have the perfect size and placement of pockets, and they're waterproof and the side zippers never break. I could go on and on, because Sync is improving their designs every year because they get feedback from their ski racing athletes. I literally sit on Zoom and tell them what to change. It's awesome. But also, I love Sync because they have always supported independent ski racers like me. And through the Sync Athlete Fund, they help bridge the funding gap in ski racing from U16s all the way to senior racers. You can shop all the great skiing and ski racing products that Sync has to offer at syncperformance.com and use the code ARCCITY15 for 15% off your order. I was talking to some women ski racers, and one subject that people talk about is when you have kids, because it's hard to come back to sport after having kids. And you're only 30, so you're still young. But I don't know if you've thought about this and if you would try to have kids, if you want to have kids, if you would come back to ski racing after having children, that kind of thing.
It is a big topic right now. And I do want to have kids. And I thank you for saying that I'm only 30, because that makes me feel better about myself. Yeah. Because my team is quite young. But yes, I am 30 and, like, definitely, like, top of mind, right? Like, your mom was a gynecologist. Some of my good friends are gynecologists. Like, they tell you that, like, by 35, you should be, like, considering having babies and, like, or at least, like, have had one or two. Cause, like, by the time you're 40, like, it's not so easy. And
yeah,
it's definitely on my mind, cause I want to have more than one kid. But I also, like, I'm coming into, like, the peak of my career. So how do I think about, like, both of those? And so for me, I've just, like, so far put it on the back burner that I'm like, I think medicine is, like, up to par in which I can have babies later. And so I just, like, would rather, like, be fully immersed in my sport as much as I can for as long as I can. And then when I'm done, go down that route. Because for me, like, I think I'm, like, pretty active. And so, like, maybe, like, having a baby at 40, if you've never played a professional sport, is, like, more difficult. I think I could maybe handle it, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that I have babies at 40, but if I did, I think I could still be okay.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, people do it. My mom had my, our last child, our last, my brother at 40.
No, and Brie did too. Brie had her last at 40. So I'm like, I've seen these women do it, and it's like, it doesn't make me less of a mom, or, like, it doesn't, maybe it's hard, but it's, like, not impossible. And, like, yeah, watching people do it is more inspiring. And, like, you watch Federica Brignone, who's 33.
Yeah.
33?
I think so.
And she has had more than half of her podiums after the age of 30. And you're like, could you, like, imagine someone being like, oh, like, when are you going to have babies right now, to Fede? Because I don't know. She's won 8 races this year. I don't think she's thinking about having a baby anytime soon.
It's so funny how this has changed. Like, it's changed drastically in the past 30 years. It used to be, as a woman or a man, like, you'd kind of hit 30 and that was it. Like, people kind of, it was this mental block. It was this sort of almost taboo. It was kind of like, yeah, you're getting old now. You should probably hang it up soon. But there's so many people pushing limits. Brignone, I like to talk about Tom Brady, but, you know, I'm that's because I'm a New England fan.
Totally. I think, and like, even in men's speed, you look at those men, they're so much older than, like, I don't know, like, you have, who else? Who else is
really, I mean, like Johan Clary. I don't know if he's still racing. Is he still racing? But he went till like 42.
No, he even talked about Perry, like Dominic Perry. Isn't he like in his like late 30s or 36?
Oh, definitely in his late 30s. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. But there's so many people still like in their like, or like mid 30s. I'll call them like 33 to 36 on like, especially the men's side, men's speed, that are so good.
Yeah.
And it's like, why can the men do it and not the women?
Oh, come on. And I mean, and
like,
speaking,
Michaela's turning 30 in like 11 days, and she's once again just hitting 100 wins. Like, I don't think she's slowing down anytime soon.
No, definitely not. And so speaking kind of on a similar topic, do you think about how you can be a role model for young girl ski racers?
Yeah, I try my best to be. I think that I try to think about ski racing in just like a happy way. I think it's like, I always say, like, if you're not having fun, don't do it. And I think that's like a pretty good motto. Like, I think that's the mindset that all like female athletes in general should have about their job or their sport, because we spend so much of our time committed to one thing that if you don't love it, it's just a waste of time. And so I think I just like to pass that along is like, yes, it can be frustrating, but like in a whole picture, are you still having like, one day can be hard. Mm-hmm. You can have a week that's hard. You can have a month that's hard. But at the end of the day, when you look back into the season, are you still having fun? And if your answer is yes, then it's like, then it's still worth it. And that's like trying to like a lesson I'm trying to like maybe pass on to like younger generations. Cause I think athletes get so frustrated so easily. Like even if you have an entirely like bad season, you can still find parts of it that were good.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you said like you're like, I don't have the parts in that. You're like, I was skiing fast in training, which I had heard from many other people, but you didn't ever have it on paper, and that sucks. Like that is a shitty feeling to digest. But also like, are you going to take that you didn't have it on paper, or are you going to take the good parts away from it? Like, and if you're only taking the bad parts away from it, it's not really worth it anymore. But if you can still find those good parts, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the message I want to pass to younger girls. It's not always going to be like butterflies and rainbows, but as long as you love it, it's worth it.
That's a great message. So we're nearing the end, Paula, but at the end of interviews, I always give guests a chance to say whatever they want. You can just shout out a sponsor or, and I know everyone I say this to, they're like, oh no, what do I say? I'm on the spot now. Like Bryce just shouted out some sponsors. But I don't know, there's some people who have ideas they wanted to talk about or like something that I'd skipped over that they wanted to say more about.
I feel like you covered a lot of really good bases. I think it's important to recognize, for me, my big shout out, I think, goes out to my parents. Mm-hmm. Without them, I wouldn't be here, right? I talked about like them funding those 5 years in which my parents didn't have the money to do it, but we still pulled it off. And then also like shouting out my teammates, because without them, there is no me. Like without really good teammates, really fast teammates, you can't improve. And so like most of my success is like dedicated to the team that surrounds me, like staff and athletes. It's never just me. Like I think if you're solo team, you can't get as fast as you want to get. And I'm lucky to have a really good team. Like you said, like we have good vibes and it's fun most days.
That's perfect. You nailed it. That might be one of the best end of podcast segments that we've had yet. Seriously. Well, Paula Moulton, we're rooting for you and thank you for visiting Arc City.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
I've got a bit of a mailbag to go through this week before we go. I really enjoy getting mail. Don't forget, you can always email me at arccityjimmy@gmail.com. If you write a particularly interesting letter, I might even read it on air. I'd love to, actually. I take critiques too, and if you have grievances, I'll read those on air. It'll be fun. Anyway, Both letters I received recently were concerning a search for cheap options for a good skiing program for high school grads taking a gap year in order to lower their points so that they could ski for a better college team, or simply to get another year of high-level racing and see where it took them. See, part of the problem is that the FIS changed the age requirement to 1 year older. So instead of high school students getting between 3 and 4 years of FIS racing in high school, they now get 2 or 3. And a lot of college teams wrap up their recruiting spots by the time the early decision application deadline rolls around in November, which means that the skiers who are young for their age, like I was, only have a single season of FIS racing to show their skills to colleges who are recruiting. Anyway, both letters were asking me for cheap options, and I'm ashamed to say that they kind of stumped me to begin with. Because while I've published a couple of episodes about cheaper and easier college skiing options, I have very little knowledge, actually, of the current landscape of ski clubs in America, and particularly their costs. So I've begun to do some digging, but I need your help. So if you have any leads at all, I'll take them. I'd love to throw together some sort of guide or flowchart for people trying to navigate this tricky and expensive road between high school and college. I mean, if I can do enough quality research and I have enough time before school starts in a couple weeks, we could make it happen. Who knows? But it's a project for the future. Regardless, if any listeners ever have any questions that you think I might be able to answer, please feel free to shoot them my way. I'm happy to. We've got 2 more episodes left this season, and I have a feeling they're going to be pretty good if we can nail them down. I might even get an in-person episode or two. But until then, don't forget to buckle your boots, tighten your straps, and believe in yourself so you can prove it to yourself, and prove it to yourself so you can believe in yourself. I'm Jimmy Krupka, and thank you for visiting Arc City.